Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly episode 76, apparently. I have no idea always on these things. And it is 23rd of March,
2020. Numbers. Big numbers.
Numbers. Not good for me. And we have a visitor as well this week. We're trying to keep a visitor every single week. Before we go there, actually, let me do a quick introduction. So my name is Sasa Yuvanen. I'm a principal program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint platform team. And in this BNP Weekly, we talk about stuff across the Microsoft 365. We have started actually the show as a SharePoint Dev Weekly, but then we renamed the thing as a BNP Weekly because it's also a lot about non-dev stuff. So
and there is more to live than SharePoint.
Yes, exactly. Even though SharePoint is actually kind of fundamental across the Office 365 or Microsoft 365, but still.
There's teams as well. I mean, you know.
Yeah, exactly. We need to work as a team. Now, before we go introduction on our guest of this week, Waldeck, who are you? Quick intros for the co-host.
I'm not a guest.
No, but before we go to the guest,
Hi, everybody. My name is Valdemar Sikas. I am head of product at Rancor. And as Vesa said, today we have a guest. We have Brett Lonsdale from the UK. Welcome, Brett.
Hello, welcome. Thank you very much for organizing this. It's a great honor to be on this show. So, I'm really excited to be here.
Yep. How about a few words about yourself, who you are, what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Brett Lonsdale. I'm a Office Apps and Services MVP out of the UK, as you mentioned. And I'm basically a owner of an ISV. So we, for the past 14 years now, have been developing tools.
Time flies, huh?
I know. Exactly. Can you believe it? So for 14 years, been building tools and apps and so on for Microsoft SharePoint, and of course that's evolved into Microsoft Teams as well now. And yep. Yeah, I guess prior to that, I was a trainer. I used to teach a lot of SharePoint developer courses and so on. In fact, the year I left as a trainer to start Lightning Tools was every single week back to back, I delivered a SharePoint 2007 5-day developer course.
You went through all of it, right? So you've seen WSBs, add-ins, sandbox solutions.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned about having dinosaurs on the show, so here is one. Yeah.
I think there's a few dinosaurs right now in the show as well.
So. Oh, yeah.
So before WSPs, yeah, I mean, we were copying and pasting stuff into the bin folders.
Yeah, talking about being dinosaur, huh? Wow. Yeah.
But actually, that's an interesting. So if you think about the journey of Lightning Tools, you probably started as a farm solution company, so a web part switch for farm solutions. And how do you see the journey from that day to the moment? And what's your kind of a confidence on the current model?
Yeah, okay, great. I think it's
a scary question. I'm crossing fingers.
Well, to be honest.
So our very, very first product was actually not a web part. It was BCS Metaman for anybody, or BDC Metaman.
Yes.
It started off as a Windows application, and BDC Metaman was on the back of, SharePoint 2007 and the Business Data Catalog. So it was a tool there that helped you to build your... what were they called before external content types? They had a name for that. Application definition files. Yeah. Yep. So you can build the application definition files, and that would allow you to connect to things like SQL and Oracle and things like that. And that's where we really started.
Yeah. How successful was that, by the way? So there was clearly a demand for that, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean... That was started before I even came to Lightning Tools, or it predated Lightning Tools, in fact. It was Todd Baginski and my former business partner, Nick Swan, as well, who created BDC Metaman. And they had done that on the back of the MVP Summit. So they'd seen BDC for the first time.
and they're like, we need a tool for that.
Yeah. And they were both going off in their own direction, and they realized that they were both doing the same thing, so joined forces. And at the time, I was burnt out training. Like I say, 2007 is back-to-back dev training. And I wanted a change in not just career, but also my life. So I moved to the States and spent a few years there. And uh, we I bought into Lightning Tools. So Lightning Tools, as I say, didn't exist. We were brainstorming a name and so on. And the BDC Metaman was the product that we developed and started selling that. And it was hugely successful. It was a fantastically successful tool. But there was a load of other things that I'd really found as gaps being in the SharePoint space through my training. And a lot of those were the next product that we created was actually the Lightning Conductor, as it's still called. And the name of that was, by the way, a joke. But I came up with that one, and Nick loved it.
And you're like, you were supposed to hate it.
Absolutely. So the Lightning Conductor that got created as a cross site collection roll up web part, and that's really what we started to do then, was to look for gaps. BDC Metaman was a gap filler. There was this gap of being able to create the ADF file, as mentioned. So that's the way we continued. And through to 2013, it was very smooth sailing. In fact, 2013 was probably our best ever year. We had a good suite of products, all being developed under WSPs, as you mentioned. Yeah. And then when 2016 came along, there was kind of a crossroad. You know, what direction do our customers go in? And I think there was a big slowdown then for us, where everybody was just on the fence. You know, do we move to SharePoint Online, or do we stick with SharePoint on premises and so on? And there was, because of that uncertainty and other things going on in the world as well at the time, presidential elections and things like that, I think people started to hold back on buying products. And we also, from our point of view, had to start building add-ins for SharePoint. And that was a challenge for us, because we went from almost being able to do what we want in the WSP model.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
actually, we can't deliver what this product is meant to do. And things like the Lightning Conductor is a good example of that. It was a cross-site collection roll-up web part. That's what it was marketed to do. And then we couldn't roll up across site collections because of the scope. we really had to sort of, it was challenging times. We had to do things like switch to search and so on to aggregate the content and things like that. Yep. But we got there, and of course we've now evolved into the SharePoint framework model, which is fantastic, and we're really seeing things ramp up again around that. It's good time.
It's an interesting journey, actually. Exactly. It's
a journey.
Robert, I think that you're not in a unique situation, that when the business was really good on the farm solution side of the house and in on-premises, but then when the cloud came and there was some challenges across the whole partner ecosystem. But now you're saying basically that things are more, smooth sailing. So the transition has happened, or what's your kind of a take? Customers are looking into actually accepting the cloud and embracing the cloud.
Yeah, now for us, we always tend to see sort of 12 to 18 months after if we talk back to SharePoint on-premises, when a major release came out, it would be about 12 to 18 months after that where people would start buying our products for that release.
Yeah.
And I think we saw the same sort of thing with the cloud. The add-ins, we had two of the first add-ins in the App Store, which is great, but nobody's buying them. And they were just there, and they sat there for ages without really selling anything. And we, of course, eventually got all of our products developed under the add-in model, and didn't really see much happening at all, apart from a few sort of early adopters and what have you. Some of our products were hugely successful as an add-in, and we started developing the SharePoint framework version of our products very very early on with the SharePoint framework model, and again didn't really see much take up of that either for probably a good 12 months. But the last 12 months, we've really seen them being adopted, and it's great. So
we can actually say that also in the adoption curve of SharePoint framework, and this is an adoption curve of any product, right? It takes ages for things to catch up, and then when it catches up, and then there we go. So trying to do something within the 3 months or 6 months, always think further down. It takes 12 to 18 months, like you said, for something to really truly catch on. So
yeah, Yeah, exactly. And I think we're seeing that within Microsoft Teams as well, because Vessel, we've been working with the Teams tabs and the personal apps, and I got some of the figures from Microsoft last week to look at the usage, and it's really low at the moment. So yeah,
you just give it another week.
Well, right now the Teams usage is skyrocketing due understandable reasons, but let's not concentrate on that topic. So, So we introduced the Teams, the SharePoint framework, as the Teams adapter a year ago. But I don't think we did a good job actually on marketing that model that efficiently in our side, and it's mainly because Microsoft actually failed on positioning that. And to be honest, I don't think the Teams, let's say, extensibility model has been really catching too much, but now it clearly has the positive vibes, and it takes ages. It takes time.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it might be exactly the same thing, right? I mean, it's like you first need traction and adoption. You first need to understand how the tool fits into your everyday job.
Yep.
And only then the extension scenarios will appear, like, oh yeah, it would make sense to integrate this or that, right? So, but the first things first, like, you cannot start with extending if you don't know how that's going to even, like, the tool by itself already is going to help you, right? So I think that it's just like first things first, and as you said, it takes time. It simply takes time. It's just physics. Right.
Yeah. In fact, I've been just the last few days been talking to my my daughter, my eldest daughter. She's 14, and she's really interested in doing marketing. So she's now got lots of time on hands. So so we're doing some marketing lessons, and I was explaining how our customers because she was thinking, well, why don't we go and put an advertisement on television or something like that? What they're looking for is to solve a problem, and they've got to experience that problem before they come looking for us. And that's what our feeder is. When they first adopt Teams or they first adopt SharePoint, they're not going to realize that they have that issue until further on down the line.
Exactly.
You're saying that there's issues within our products?
No.
Customers have issues. Brett, there's one more thing that I'm interested in, so you said that originally you build your products as WSPs, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, in the past, like, there was the model where you could build something and that would integrate with your farm. You could just deploy it on a farm and it would just run. Like, you didn't need anything. When you switched over to add-ins, like, there was this requirement that suddenly the customer would have to have servers somewhere that runs your app. Like, to what extent do you think that was a reason for the lower adoption of products and maybe even less interest in deploying an add-in?
Yeah, that was certainly challenging. And one of the things that we always try to make sure is that when somebody is trialing one of our products, that there's no hurdles in the way. we want them to be able to get that thing deployed without any hassle whatsoever. And some of the products, so the Lightning Adapter, as I mentioned, that's the roll-up tool. It was created as a SharePoint hosted app. And once it was in the app catalog, great, it just worked. And I think for that reason, that turned into our best-selling tool for early versions of the cloud. There's a couple of other products that in the WSP format, they had SQL databases for storage and they had timer jobs and things like this. And yet we were then saying, well, for the permissions tool, you have to go and set up all these register the app in Azure and this, that, and the other.
And you're like, no.
Social Squared had the SQL database that needed to be deployed in SQL Azure, and that had to be configured and so on. And that's going to carry on a cost as well, which we didn't know what that cost was going to be. And these were hurdles in the way of those products, so they saw less adoption. But SharePoint Framework has really helped us to overcome that as well. So that was
my next thing I wanted to ask. Like, to what extent SPFX alleviates some of these pain points that we had in the past with add-ins, because it integrates again with UI better, and to what extent there is still need for some backend services, as you said, like timer jobs or long-running operations or permissions elevations for things. You still need to have that additional component running somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think it's just down to the SharePoint framework model, but also things like Graph as well. So if we take, for example, the the Lightning Conductor again, that in its early form was a SharePoint only rollup web part. You know, it would use the server-side object model originally to perform some aggregation and literally crawl through items and so on. And then when we moved to the add-in, we were using CSOM, and that had performance issues and things like that with, you know, we were trying to aggregate too much. So then we switched to also using search, but that meant that, you know, you couldn't just get to your site columns. You had to use the search managed columns.
Yeah,
and
managed properties.
Again, a headache. Yeah, sorry, managed properties. And then with the SPFX, it's like, well, okay, we've got the CSOM. It performed a lot better in that regard, but also we can go and get content using the graph as well. So it's no longer just SharePoint lists. Now we can go and get things like planner tasks and OneDrive items and things like that. And that's where we've been sort of really focusing our efforts, is building a much better experience around that one. And also with the things like the Fabric UI icons and things, you know, we've been able to utilize those for conditional formatting and so on. So we've actually really improved the product through the framework model.
Cool.
And is the product now also for Microsoft Teams, or is it only a SharePoint web part? Can you talk about that transition? Well, you actually mentioned that already, but what's your take on that? Is there a growing interest? You said that numbers are not going through that much, but what about in conferences when we used to have them? Is there an interest on that, or how does that?
Yeah. When we used to have them.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That was so 2019. That was,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Conference.
So old school. Meeting physically people, what?
No. Yeah, crazy.
Meeting people, what do you mean?
Exactly, exactly. Well, we are meeting in here. Come on, that's almost the same. So
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so Teams. I think what's... I think here, so yeah, all of our products are available for Teams. Originally, it's a Teams tab. So I worked with you, Vesa, as over 12 months ago now. It doesn't seem like it, but yep. we were talking about back then how we could take our existing web parts for SharePoint and make them available inside a Teams tab.
Yep.
And it works great. It's fantastic. People can add them there as well. And you know, if you're collaborating in Teams instead of SharePoint, then you can still make use of our products and what have you. So that's all really well and good. I think one of the challenges that we're facing is that people don't realize this. And when we're demonstrating our products to them, you know, they're really after the web part in SharePoint. And then the sort of follow-on question is, do you use Teams at all? I say, yes. So we show them it working in Teams, and they're blown away. They're like, oh, that's like, absolutely amazing.
Aha moment.
They didn't anticipate that was going to be a need. I think it's great. So
that's still in the, like we said, they're still in the they don't know about the gap in the Teams, that there's a demand or potential demand in their company for that kind of functionality.
Well, I mean, maybe so you could see it as a gap, but also on the other hand, like, you don't know what you don't know. So if you don't know what's possible, you don't even think about it, right? So I guess maybe by extension, they would experience exactly the same way if you would ask them. So you guys use Outlook. What if you could aggregate the relevant info in Outlook? And I'll be like, wow, can I do that? Yes, you can. Right? I mean, it's the same thing, right?
That's called digital dashboard. Come on. So that's never mind. What was it? There was a way of, what was it? Was it digital dashboard? Was it?
There was it. Yeah.
Anyway.
Digital dashboard. Never heard of it. I don't know.
This actually should work. I'm going to double check it right now. So in the inbox, if you click your name.
Now we'll show dashboard.
No, I can't show my inbox. I'm the centralized switchboard of the Microsoft, which we'll come back on that one in a second. Funny story. But if you click your name in the Outlook in the desktop, you'll land on the digital dashboard, which says the Outlook today. And there was a way of extending that and provide a custom extensibility on that. But nobody...
What is Outlook on a desktop? What are you talking about? Seriously, like, I've been using Outlook on the web since... 6 years, maybe more? Seriously? Yeah.
Anyway, for those who haven't, because you'd rarely click that, but for those who don't know, if you have an Outlook desktop, click your, at least in my case, it says my email address as the root node of the inbox. Click that one and you'll see what it's a big data.
That's an interesting thing. Yeah. Like, what does it say about you as a person because you click your own name in the, like, I see my name and you, I need to click it. What does it tell about me?
I'll be searching and clicking my name all the time.
Yeah, like, where's my name? What does it know about me?
Say my name.
Do your best, sir.
I'll just walk away now.
Bye-bye. Stop digging.
Now, that was a bad job.
Come on. Okay, let me throw one in there. Personal apps.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. I was about to come back to that. Okay, concentrate. Back on business. So what about personal apps? Personal apps is something which we support for SharePoint Framework quite recently, and actually in general in Teams as well. It was a relatively new add-on. What's your take on the personal apps versus the tabs? So,
yeah. So it's really well suited to a couple of our products. So we are adopting it. There is... Well, for the Lightning Conductor, I think it's a little bit challenging because the idea of the Lightning Conductor is it's, you know, something that always needs configured or configuring. So we're going to configure.
And personal apps don't have a native configuration experience. Yeah,
exactly. So talking about, you know, adopting our products to other uses, and actually you just touched on it. So what happens when you click your name in Outlook? You see all this stuff about you. About this. We're going to go down that route again, but
I didn't know that.
But this is what we're doing with the Lightning Conductor. Actually, is as a personal app. So we're leaving it as something that you can configure as a Teams tab or as a web part in SharePoint. But we're also building a version of it as a personal app, so you can just add it, and then it's going to have everything aggregated already, and you can, you know, tweak the reports, but they're already going to show you, you know, your planner tasks, your OneDrive items, your tasks and want lists and things like that as well. So it can really sort of become your space with inside the Teams platform. And then from a permissions point of view, we're looking at being able to extend that into Teams as well. So you can do things like add and remove users from groups and work across your private channels and so on to keep things tidy and that kind of idea. So yeah, fantastic.
So you are actually building the digital dashboard for Teams.
That, in Teams, yes. So,
yeah, kind of.
You gave it away. Dude, don't.
The first product that we've got available for Teams is a personal app. We're actually giving away free for 6 months on the same basis that Microsoft is giving away a Teams license for 6 months as well. And that is the Social Square. It's a discussion forum tool, so it's, you know, going to help people working from home if they need a discussion forum tool. So that's something you can go and get today and just start using it. But and if, maybe if you just want to play with personal apps, it's a great tool to go and start using.
And you can pin them on the left navigation nowadays quite nicely with Teams and all of that. So Teams is getting really flexible from that perspective. So people can actually personalize even the Teams experience with your personal apps and your corporate apps on the left navigation. So, but what if you would have too many? I don't know. Anyway.
Bigger screen. You need to have bigger screen.
Yes. I don't know what's actually happens in Teams if you add 20 apps on the left.
I mean, you have already in there ellipses, so it's already ellipses.
Oh, yeah,
on,
fair point.
So it probably just going to wrap them in.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. Anyway. Good. Sorry, got completely distracted on my way of thinking. Now,
click your name. Some say.
But the personal apps, absolutely. And we can say it's an interesting, let's say, dimension as well. And we can definitely see an uptake on the interest of partners building those personal apps as well. What's your take, by the way, Brett, on the why are you choosing to do your stuff using SharePoint Framework versus building the let's say, traditional Teams hosted SaaS-based tabs or personal apps? Why are you choosing to use SharePoint Framework? So, what is the decision factor over there?
I think the decision around that is really to have the single development model for SharePoint and Teams. You know, we're a small company. We don't have endless resources. So yeah, the idea is to really just build the same product across all of the platforms. So yeah, that's really the sole reason there.
That makes sense.
And to build something as a personal app, it's really a line in the manifest. it's not a huge task that we've taken on or anything like that to build something. Yep. Convenient, yep. So.
And again, still exposed in add-ins. Yeah.
Yep. That's true. For those who obviously were not in the MVP Summit, we are actively working on the AppSource. We talked about this one. AppSource is supposed to support for SPFX. And most likely, Pret is going to be one of the pilot customers on that one as well. So
perfect.
We'll get there. And obviously, we cannot disclose any exact timelines at this point, but we are having progress.
A Wednesday. It's going to be a Wednesday.
It's going to be a Wednesday. Which Wednesday? Who knows? But it's going to be a Wednesday. You can quote us on that. Now, let's go to the articles. Let's go to the articles for a while and then come back and close up as well. So, let's actually jump in the article side of the house. Tell me when you can see my screen. 1, 2, 3. No. No.
Yep. No. Is it there yet? Yes. No.
So let's start first with this one. Last week we had the MVP summit as a virtual one. What was your take, by the way, for both of you? You attended. I saw you attending on the sessions. What was your feeling? Success?
Right.
Good job.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations to Microsoft on this one. You know, there was very short notice on putting that together. Yeah. And when you were inside Teams, looking at all of the different teams that you could, go and find the sessions, it was just mind-blowing how many there were and how they were put together. It went so smoothly. Everything was thought about. So not just the delivery of the sessions and getting the feedback, but also even having some space where people could chat in general and discuss what they'd learned and so on. Yep. So that sort of corridor experience that you have at Summit in person, it was also available really for yep. people to continue that conversation. I think there was a few channels outside of the official channel as well for discussing that, which also worked well because you were able to speak more openly about your experience and so on. But yeah, overall it was great. I thought all the presenters did a fantastic job. Whoever was organizing it did an amazing job. And it's good actually that we're still seeing some of the conversations continuing now, which of course would have finished at Summit as soon as everybody jumps on their planes and flies back home. So some great conversations still going on, which is awesome to see. So.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Waldeck?
Yeah, I can only add to compliments, like to everybody who organized it, to the team who organized it, the PMs who are on the calls, the engineers who are on the calls, like everybody, to make it available on such a short notice in a new way, new format, get everything organized.
Yeah.
Perfect. Originally, I wouldn't attend it because of the health issues that I have, but in this way, I could participate. I could basically be a part of it. I could follow sessions. I could do different things. And I didn't miss anything, really. So it's really, I really hope that this is there to stay. Because if you think about it, like across the world, and it doesn't really get you to that point to think about it until it's there forced upon us. Across the world, there are people who cannot come for personal, political, financial, health reasons. And that way, it can be all-inclusive. It can be available to everybody, no matter whether you are there or not, right? And the only thing that we really need to pay attention to, because the whole event is under NDA, that we just adhere to it, because it might be a harder thing to enforce when it's streamed. But I think that if we really stick to these rules, it can be a beautiful thing that will be inclusive for everybody. So it will be open. It will make a better. It will be a better platform for everybody who is part of the MVP program.
Yeah, absolutely agree on that. And most likely we'll learn from this. So first of all, Caruana Katimu and Lori Pottemeyer were really the main players behind the scenes making the magic happen. And obviously there's plenty of other people then coordinating and helping and MVP organization and all of that, making everything happen. So, but Lori and Caruana were really the main people behind the scenes making sure that we are ready to go. So hopefully they will have time off this week. It would be nice. Obviously, the NDA is a big challenge because anybody could technically record anything through what they're saying through Teams. So hopefully that trust will remain with MVPs. And then at the same time, it is fair to say that we cannot go and be as open and honest as we would be in on-site, but still provide additional value and for both sides. So
but I guess like you could say there is the counter argument to it that, and I can only speak from the experience of my area of the program, which is the Office Apps and Services and Office Dev. There are regular remote calls already where NDA info is being shared.
Absolutely.
So how is this different? It isn't.
Yep.
It's still an online event put up in trust from both sides that NDA will be enforced. And this is just another issue of it. Right. Yep. I keep my hopes up that this is there to stay and that next summit, maybe when there is even in person. It's also being streamed to those who cannot be there.
Yeah, exactly. That would be probably the best option. So we would do a combination of things because it is definitely much more inclusive for those who cannot join. So
yeah, and I mean, and we have technology. We have the technology. Tech, right?
It reduces our carbon footprint, all of that stuff. So it makes sense. Anyway, so thank you for that feedback. I think it was quite nice setup. So looking forward, hopefully doing more of this in the future as well. There was a lot of people who were not used to this kind of a setup in Microsoft either. So there's a lot of people who are now being forced on the tooling and the technology and everything else. And obviously we who work from home, we've been doing this for quite a few years already. But I think it's a really great opportunity for us as a Microsoft to learn to embrace the virtual things as well. So,
and I guess the same thing applies to you, right? So being a part of PG, you have attended the last few summits, I don't know how many, 4 or 5 in person, right?
Yep.
So this was the first one for you also virtually. So how did you experience that from the other side, like being on the presenting side of it?
I don't think that from a presentation perspective, I think that's a completely same setup. You create your presentation and deliver. I do a demos and there's a chat and you'll run through the chat. And obviously there's a, if you haven't done that too much, there's a, you need to learn differences and nuances based on that and the face-to-face presentation. For me, that's definitely not a problem. But I think the only kind of a missing piece is obviously the evenings and the corridor talks. Then at the same time, it's much less stressful because you don't have to use that much time for the whole setup. You basically are scheduled for your spot and that's it. And if you don't want to, you don't have to go to the Teams and have a discussion with people. So again, debatable if you want to do that. What is that yellow thingy? Sorry.
Well, and also I think that it doesn't, so I think it's, so the one thing that I found is that it's way easier to take part of discussion even if you are not there at the right time, because like if it's a corridor talk, if you aren't there, it's gone. Like the moment is gone, there is no record of it.
Absolutely.
Whereas here, like you can go to take care of your kid, your family, do other stuff, come back, and it's still there.
Yep, you can still continue the discussion and all of that. So a lot of value on that, absolutely. And I think this definitely will be the future of many of the conferences as well. So anyway, let's actually go through the articles and we'll look back on the chat. So a few updates from the Microsoft Graph side of the house, Microsoft Graph and .NET SDK updates, service library, core library, Azure SDK alignment. So basically an update what's happening on this side, because there hasn't been that much discussions and updates on it, which is a fair point. I think Daryl and Jeremy Fake and the guys, they're working really, really hard on the changes and improvements in here. And then the product groups like Jeremy Kelly are working really, really hard on getting additional API exposure from the products. So there's a lot of stuff happening, but what's your take, Brett, from a SharePoint Graph API perspective? You still need to fall back on the SESAM REST on the SharePoint case?
Yeah, we're still using CSOM for the SharePoint list aggregation and so on. But like I said, it's been able to extend that product's capabilities as well by allowing us to go and get information from other parts of Microsoft 365, Planner and things like that too. So that's great. I think again, it's the awareness thing. In fact, I did a demonstration just last week, and somebody was expecting me to show them a charts tool when we talked about Graph.
Yeah,
it was that misunderstanding of the
term. Fair point.
he was again blown away by the capabilities when I showed him what we could do.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's making everything, all of those applications inside the Microsoft 365 suite, we can integrate with all of them through Graph. So that's a fantastic fit for us with that tool.
Absolutely. Now, moving on to other articles as well. Page limit added to Microsoft Graph OneNote from OneNote team. Quite a short thingy noting that that's happening for those who are working with that API. Accessing Outlook items in the user's archive, shared or delegated mailboxes using Microsoft Graph. So additional APIs happening here as well, which is good. We're gradually introducing additional features and capabilities across Microsoft 365, so really cool. Now, on the community side of the house, Tracy, who were with us last week with a dinosaur and a shark, that's fun. Funny episode if you haven't actually seen that, is still continuing the journey of the what was it, Power Month was the name, wasn't it? One Power Platform blog article every single day. So there's a lot of good stuff here. And one of the things which we keep on repeating in this weekly discussions as well, it's really good to see that there's plenty of this what, how, when, why blog post as well. Because like Brett just told,
the basics,
it's the
really
awareness.
The basics.
Awareness and basics. People are just Microsoft Graph. Oh, so it's a drawing thingy. No, what? So
Tracy's getting all those cupcakes out there. So it's great.
Exactly. Good. Then on other articles, this is from Nandeep. Nandeep, SharePoint Framework facelift dropdowns with an Office UI Fabric icons. Again, using the Office Fabric icons and then making things look better and better in the dropdowns. And that's actually pretty cool. So nice way of presenting things. There was related on that one, this reminded me, somebody noted at some point that, hey, by the way, have you noticed that Microsoft Teams, you can actually use emojis in the channel names? And at least in our case, it went completely crazy. So now everybody's not just throwing those emojis in on the channel names. But it actually makes a lot of sense because it's more descriptive, because some of us are seeing text, some of us are more graphical, and it's more inclusive between two people. So really cool stuff, actually. Really, really nice looking things and presentations. So really cool. This one is from David Ramalho, Storm Technologies. He flipped companies pretty recently, and he's a new MVP as well. So run a PMP PowerShell with saved module, and basically he's been always really, really good on showing PowerShell stories. The quality of that one is, though, it might be, not sure, is it actually on this one or not. So anyway. Good guidance on there. Power Automate SharePoint Get Items action, new options for folders. So there's new settings on the Power Automate side as well all the time. And we'll keep on improving that side of the house. Jax, who's been in many of our community calls, is responsible of the SharePoint integration to Power Platform side. So one of the persons responsible of that. So a lot of improvements with there as well. This one is from Mike Hommel, React Hooks and Office Development, bringing it all together. React Hooks has been really, really popular, clearly. People love the latest, relatively new version of React introduced to React Hooks, and that then makes things more easier to implement. And really good blog post, long one explaining the value of those React Hooks and how to make things happen. So really, really cool stuff. This is from Mikhail, so ex-MVP nowadays, program manager, for those who do not know. I'm not sure if we want to actually even talk about this one. Should we move on?
Yes, of course.
This one is actually pretty interesting. We talked about this one with Mikhail for a while, and that do we even want to demonstrate this one, or should we actually do this? It's a technical demo on using a SharePoint framework as a script editor web part, which is now a tab in Microsoft Teams, because any SharePoint framework web part can be a tab in a team or a personal app with a snap of a finger. It is a one setting on the manifest. And in the same way as we have the modern script editor, which gives you the capabilities of then doing ad hoc widgets, even in Teams using this model.
But this is actually an interesting thing, because if you think about it, I don't know if you caught it that a while back, there was a project from the Garage team, I think, as their name. So there's a team within Microsoft that does accessibility around, or does some, let's say, POCs around Office.
Yep.
So they built FindTime, they built some other things. One of the things that they built is the script lab that allows you to use JavaScript code in Excel. So if you want to build a macro, but then kind of macro-like thing, but don't want to do it in BBA, but want to do it in JavaScript or in TypeScript, like, you can do that. So, and that's not different from embedding a piece of script, which is exactly the same thing. So I think the use case is still there, and it's becoming only like more and more obvious, and there is more need for that, because like, there are more people familiar with JavaScript as opposed to VBA or something. There's always a need to, I just want to do this one thing that isn't available out of the box, but I don't want to build a whole app for that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably also why Power Apps has been so highly successful, because that's addressing that scenario. But so I need to do X and Y and Z in a simple way. Even though Power Apps is no longer just super simple, I think it's getting more and more complicated.
But licensing is also a separate discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Let's not have that discussion in here.
Next.
This one is from Mikhail as well. Side effect of mapping crawl properties to refine managed properties. So Mikhail is working on the FAST team or Microsoft Search team, and this really around the mapping and what does it mean. A quick note. I think Mikhail's blog posts are really to the point, which is really good as well. So reminders on learnings and all of that. Elio using new multilingual APIs in modern SharePoint. So basically, how do we set up things, the multilingual translations, multilingual experiences across modern pages, multilingual communication sites. So basically, there are APIs, there are features, there's capabilities, and he's explaining how to make things happen. So pretty cool. This one is from Mark D. Anderson, using the PMP Modern Search Web Parts, which refiners for the site name and content type. Let's see if we can have an output in here. Okay. So it's basically hidden because the results are apparently too relevant. But basically, the whole thing on the fact that you can build classic SharePoint search experiences, styled experiences in modern SharePoint. So with the BMP Search Web Parts, which are coming from Mikhail. Well, actually, Frank Cornu is the main lead. Mikhail is helping with those as well. So, and there's quite a few other people who've been participating and contributing on that work as well. So thank you for that. Laura released a new blog post as well. Bring your team's provisioning, order form, and approvals where they matter the most, part one. And she writes typically pretty long blog posts and explains stuff in a detail, which is really, really good. And it's really around the fact that how do we do personal apps and how do we set the settings and all of that stuff. So really, really cool stuff as well. So, and she, by the way, pretty recently opened up a insider's newsletter as well. So you can sign up for our news from Laura. But yeah, so this is really around the fact that you're setting up the policies to get your applications visible for everybody on the left navigation. So because you can control that. So. And then this one is from
Alex Sadamov.
Alex Sadamov, yes. There we go. Yes, Alexei. Now, how to provision modern SharePoint pages with the custom SPFX web part via PMP template. So basically, how does the provisioning templating works, and how they can put modern pages and web parts on a page and provision new content in SharePoint. There is no out-of-the-box capabilities for it, so it's using the PMP templating engine for it. So pretty cool. Good. Let's actually get back on the chatting, and I promised to do a quick joke. So we started delayed recording because my phone rang from an unknown number, and it's like, okay, so I'm waiting certain other things to happen, so I needed to take the call, and they will say, person who called and started explaining that he had just bought a new laptop and he needs to do business with Office Business Edition, but he can't activate or install the Office client. And I'm like, okay, who are you? And so how did you call for me? And so we called Microsoft Finland and then they forwarded the call to you. Because I explained the problem. So it's just like, I'm seriously turning into a Microsoft switchboard. So any questions? Let me know. I will help you.
So I cannot install Windows on my Mac. That's what's wrong with
it? Exactly. So of Microsoft Finland's reception or the central switchboard routed this particular question for me because I'm the person apparently who supports everybody, which is okay. So.
You're in the office team, right?
Yeah, yes, I am. Yeah, so.
How hard can it be?
Kind of.
You wear multiple hats. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. Mind-blowing. But by the way, this wasn't the first time. So this has happened in the past as well. Hopefully this isn't the theme. So, but it gets slightly complicated.
As long as you pick up the phone, customer, and you answer the questions,
that
customers are happy.
That's the problem.
How will you rate this support call? A 10. Perfect. We need to call Vesa.
So can you reboot that call as well through to Spence Harbor or something like that?
Oh, that's actually good. That's actually a really good one. I can't help with this, but let me give the name of...
But I know you're just the person who can.
Exactly. Who's always so friendly on the random calls. Now, what's actually really interesting also is that we're seeing obviously more and more people working from home. And I was saying this to the person in this call that it's at least, and then I tweeted that actually last week as well, at least in my case, the connection point has quadrupled, basically four times more than the week before. And it's mind-blowing. It's just Teams is just, I can't keep up anymore. And the email is just, but obviously it makes sense because now a lot of our my team members and the Redmond people, they're also working from home. So they are basically no longer, they don't have the opportunity of going to the person next door. So then it's the same communication channels for everything. So it's an interesting explosion of communications. So
now, in other words, you realize how much you have missed over time. The question is it better the way it is now? Or do you want to go back to like, I am not here?
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting challenge as well. That's one of the things that we're seeing because you know, we have a small office here in the UK. And when you're in person, it could just be something simple like, have you got the bank account details or something like this? Yep. It's like, yeah, they're over there. Yep. Now it's like, okay, now I have to go and get them for you and send it to you for you to have them. And it's everything is just so much more time consuming. Yep. But
I mean, you could still say they're on my desk there, and then the person has to go to the office.
Yeah. Exactly. We'll get past this. So, but there's an interesting changes of the working behaviors. Absolutely. So, and also the homeschooling, at least in our case, because our kid is in the second grade. So from fourth grade forward in Finland, they have a remote schooling, but for not between one and three. So because he's in second grade, we're doing homeschooling now. So we changes the working time slightly as well and all of that. So, but it's, hey, we'll adapt. Adaption is what's the right term for the unit? Adaption is the how we survive. Adapt on the new way of working. Adapt on new way of doing business. Adapt on everything. So
no. Who moved my cheese?
Yes. Good. Any last word from either one of you? Or let's go. What are you planning to do this week? Any news? Any interesting stuff?
Yeah. Actually, it's very specific to SPFX as well. So one of the things that I'll be working on with we've been building in some SPFX connections, so dynamic connections with our web parts, so they can communicate with each other. So I'm really looking forward to pushing that out. So that'll be great. Filtering and things like this for the Lightning Conductor, and also being able to provide data from the Lightning Conductor as well to things like charts, things that actually charts, not graphs.
Yeah. Good point. but yeah, that's definitely the dynamic data connection and then web part connections. I don't think they're used that much either. So I don't think that's, that might be also because people just don't know that you can actually make those things happen. So it is really about the adaption and people learning that, oh, I can actually do this kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, explaining that this option is there. Yeah.
It's exactly. Another example of something that we couldn't really do in the add-in model, but you know, we were able to do many moons ago for the ship on-prem. So. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. Makes sense. What about you, Waldeck? What's on your table?
A lot of stuff, actually. So one, we're doing some more new stuff at Rancor. So I'm working on that. Two, there was an event in the US that went from in-person to online about Teams. I submitted 2 talks for it, and both of them got accepted. It is on April 8th. So I need to prep for these 2 things.
Yeah.
The same day, we have a webinar.
What are the topics, by the way?
No. So it's about Teams. I think the topics either already are or will be announced. One is about the governance of Teams.
Yeah.
And that already ties back into conversation that we had a few episodes back with Carolina Kutukari.
Yep. Yep.
Those about
your
so basically.
Is awesome, by the way. Pronunciations, just step up.
I'm practicing, right? Like, it rubs off. Like, the more I hang out with you, it is.
Carolina. Right, so, Carolina. Yeah, there we go.
I mean, it's. So the topic is very much about elaborating on the discussion that we had. So there was one and two. A while back at Rancor, we moved from Slack to Teams.
Yep.
So me, together with my boss, Matt Einig, we will talk about journey that we had for like going from Slack to Teams, the pros and the cons and how we experienced that, what are the things that we struggled with, basically for everybody who is looking at the same thing or maybe moving from some other IM platform to Teams, like what are different things you have to take into account. So we will be talking about that. So that is on April 8th, the same day on April 8th, we have a webinar at Rancor about related to the code analysis. So that is also on my plate. I will be doing that. Topic is TBD. We'll announce that soon. And then on April 1, we have another webinar at Rancor about the governance space. That's also on my plate.
Yep.
So for the coming 2.5 weeks or so, I have to prepare 4 presentations and then do daily work.
Yeah,
and also have kids at home, so
all
heads of that
extra. Exactly. And on my side, we're talking the store thingy should be moving forward. We're also talking about AppStore/Store. There will be a real store integration, not only AppStore.
Store.
Yeah. Well, what is a real store? What is not? but again, the SharePoint store, as in whatever you land in on the SharePoint side as well. So all of that is now moving forward. No timelines, no promises at this point.
Wednesday.
We don't want to disappoint.
On Thursday. Yeah,
Wednesday.
This will be Thursday. Thursday.
And then the StarterKit thingy should be moving forward. StarterKit V2. We're getting that one hopefully finalized. I really need to start finding just time to create the template for it. So we have a new design and all of that available. So that should be coming out pretty soon as well. Cool. So, and a lot of the StarterKit template web parts, and the web parts can be then individually installed to the tenants, and then a lot of them actually supports also Microsoft Teams capabilities. So you can actually have, for example, the email web part as an example, your latest emails as a team tabs or a personal application, and voila, now you have your Outlook view directly in Teams. So.
And then you can also expose this in Outlook. Wait a minute, it's email. You already have.
Yeah, exactly. Ah.
For some things, just because you can doesn't mean you should, right?
That's true. That is true. Anyway, I think that's it for now for this week. Thank you, Brett, for joining us. Really great discussion.
Thank you, buddy.
Really great to hear the journey from a partner perspective, the slowness, and then the excitement which we have right now on the platform, so which is really good. So
yeah, it's been great to be a part of this and appreciate it. And yeah,
thank you.
Stay safe.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
As well. Stay safe. We'll be back in a week. Cheers, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.